Hey everybody, welcome to the mini pod. I am Paul Noonan of Acme Packing Company and the Shepherd Express. And before I get into football stuff, we are almost done setting up a new distribution network for all of the former APC podcasts. It's going to be called Frozen Tundra Frequency. It already exists. You should be able to go out there and find it and find last week's mini pod on it. And this one I'm going to put there too, just for testing purposes. This will also be on the Patreon, of course. And after this, the mini pod will be returning full time to the Patreon. You know, experimental. You patrons, you didn't lose any value. Nobody knows this exists yet, so nobody got it for free. It's a good way just to test the new feed and make sure it's working. So it is out there. If you want to go find it, it'll be there. If you're wondering why bother doing this in the first place, there is an advantage. I'm never getting rid of the old feed because I own it and it's mine. And if I ever need to, you know, go independent fully again, it's nice to have it there. And it's a good way to get the show, of course. Networks are tenuous by their nature. People come and go and leave and start new things and whatnot. But there is an advantage to having the show on a network where other shows just kind of roll in next. It expands our audience. For fans of the other podcasts, they get to randomly hear reporting is eligible. They become fans. They tune in. It's helpful for everybody. And if you want a podcast experience where one show just rolls into another show with some variety, it's really a good way to do things. So we may do a little more with it. Those guys, I'm helping. I'm good at this kind of setting up things. But, Tex, maybe one of the, I shouldn't put this on him, one of the other guys may end up being in charge. Maybe they'll do a Patreon. Maybe they'll do something that offers additional content. Don't know, still speculative. But bottom line is, we'll have this sort of network version of the APC pods like we had before, just not affiliated with Acme Packing Company anymore, since SB Nation is no longer doing this. So Frozen Tundra Frequency is the name we settled on. It's out there. If you enjoyed the APC feed version of what we did before, go check that out. Hopefully, as we continue to develop it, it will sort of turn into that again. Now, on to football. This is a dangerous draft for the Packers. And while the Packers turned in a phenomenal season last year and knocked their draft out of the park, there's a ton of risk involved in this one for a couple of reasons. The main one is the positions that the Packers need to improve on to become like juggernaut title contenders are not really present in this draft. It's not that kind of thing. Like, there are not a ton of high-end safeties in this draft, which is something that they could use. There are a couple of decent off-ball linebackers, but it's not a great deep off-ball linebacker class. This draft is strong at high-value positions, honestly. It is strong at quarterback. It is strong at receiver. It is strong as offensive line. Now, the Packers could use another receiver. They could certainly use offensive linemen. It's not like they'll get nothing out of this, but it's also sort of an idiot-proof draft for a lot of teams that just need to improve at high-value positions. It's hard for a dumb team to screw this draft up, honestly. Our division isn't really full of dumb teams. The Bears, you can still argue, but the Bears, I think, are on the cusp of actually being somewhat dangerous here, and we should probably stop calling them idiots. The last few trades they've made have been pretty good. Yes, we can make fun of Chase Claypool, and we can make fun of the fact that they only have 4 picks in this draft, which they do, and ha ha ha. But they're looking to potentially be formidable very quickly, and we've had the benefit of one of the worst perennial divisions in football for a very long time. You know, the Lions were jokes until a couple of years ago. The Vikings have been pretty good, but they can never find a quarterback. This is legitimately dangerous territory. The Bears are likely to get their franchise quarterback, and I do think Caleb Williams is quite a bit better than anybody else they've ever taken in the first round of quarterback. Like, this is not Cade McNown. Rex Grossman was dumb. We all knew it was dumb at the time. Mitch, you know, I'm not going to go too much on revisionist history there. I think the problem with Trubisky wasn't so much that they got it wrong, which they did. It's that it was a very typical Bear process of shuffling off just a ton of picks to move up one spot to pick the wrong guy. They just compounded mistake with mistake. They would have been, of course, better off just waiting and either, well, taking Mahomes. Not so much Watson, I guess, in retrospect. Just wait and see who falls to you there. That's the way to handle that. Your scouting was bad. But, you know, Caleb Williams is, I think, almost an idiot-proof quarterback. Now, there are no sure things, of course, but Caleb put together two very good years at USC, one with an offense that I think is pretty quarterback-friendly, and then one with Cliff Kingsbury running things, which Cliff Kingsbury is going to be a big deal on all of these quarterbacks, as it turns out. I don't think much of him. I think he's bad. I think he has failed upward a ton at this point. His offense doesn't really work. He is bad at developing quarterbacks. And Caleb put up a great season in a super dysfunctional offense. So I think the Bears are going to get a good one there. They also have another high draft pick. And my nightmare scenario there is that they end up with Roma Dunes as well, who is often mocked to them in that spot and I think is as good as Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr. If they get Caleb and Roma Dunes, and in addition to DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, who they just picked up, that's going to be a formidable offense. They still need help at offensive line, and they only have four picks. But like, I suspect with one of the other two picks that they have, that they'll end up with a good offensive lineman. And if they don't get Roma Dunes, like Joe Alt might be there when they pick. That also makes them instantly a lot better. It's really lined up to make the Bears competitors very quickly. And the Bears defense was very good in the back half of last year. Now, defense, you know, it waned, goes in and out very quickly. You can't predict it from year to year, but they have good pieces there, generally speaking. And they have the makings of turning things around pretty quickly. The NFL is not a linear league. You can change things extremely quickly, especially if you change quarterbacks. And so, this is dangerous because the Bears, I think, are looking to turn into a very competent team very quickly. The Vikings are also very dangerous, and they clearly know what they need. They have already made moves to get into position to take a quarterback in this class. And if you've listened to my or read my quarterback evaluation so far, and I'll have one on Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix and probably Michael Penix coming out maybe today if I have enough time. We'll see. Certainly on Monday at the latest. I often say things like, well, if this guy lands in the right spot, he can be very successful. The Vikings are the right spot. And I've said that mostly with J.J. McCarthy, and that's who they're rumored to be after. But like, if Drake May lands on the Vikings, that's the perfect spot for him. I view him as more of a developmental guy. But there's fewer places to develop better than in Minnesota, which runs a very Shanahan-y-like offense with a lot of play action and just a stacked wide receiving core. That would be a totally great place for him to land. But Jaden Daniels, he has problems we'll get to in a moment. But again, that is also a good place for him to land, where Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison can make the most out of what he does really, really well. It's a good place for Bo Nix to land. Like, the Vikings have been a very good team with Kirk Cousins. And I think this is a good quarterback class. Like, anybody in this class, I would put ahead of anybody in last year's class outside of C.J. Stroud. And Caleb Williams, I've had on my radar for a long time. I'd put him ahead of C.J. Stroud. So there's a very good chance the Vikings do at least Cousins or better in this draft. And they have the way things are shaping up, they might end up doing better than they thought. Like, Drake May's stock has gone down a little bit. Jaden Daniels' Vegas odds are higher than a lot of people now. I think that's a mistake, but it is the case. That is what the case is. And even if they decide to wait, Michael Penix, I don't believe in. I think he's kind of Fitzpatrick-y. I think that's where he ends up kind of being. But like, Bo Nix, not that scary, but I think runs a good offense in that offense. Jaden Daniels, I think, is very boom or bust, but could be perfect in that offense. And J.J. McCarthy, I think, would run that offense very well. And if they did end up with Drake May, like, that's just a disaster situation. That's terrible for the rest of the division. I mean, it's a disaster for the Packers and the Bears and the Lions. You don't want that to happen. That's bad. And definitely possible. Now, the other thing is the Lions are obviously a very good team already. They need defensive help. They're kind of in a situation with the Packers where a lot of the players available in this draft are not the kind of players that will help them get over the hump. They need cornerbacks. They could use inside linebacking as well, even though they drafted that Iowa guy last year. I don't think he hasn't shown me very much so far. They need safety help. Their problems are on the defense. They have good pass rushers. I'll probably use another edge, honestly. But, like, this is not a great Lions draft. Their offensive line's already stacked. They don't need that. They could use another receiver, and I think that's where they start to get a little bit dangerous. Amon-Ra's good, but he's a slot receiver. The rest of the receivers are kind of meh. Jameson Williams, I think, is not going to work out. And so the way the Lions are dangerous in this draft is just if they pick, like, three receivers, there's a good chance all of them will be good, or two of them will be good anyway. And they pick at the end of the first round, they're 29th. And if they can just get a little more help for their offense, they'll become more formidable. Their defense is going to need some work. I don't think that's available. But, like, just from a Packers perspective, they could use more offensive linemen, of course. Everybody could use more offensive linemen, but it's not a weakness that's going to improve drastically. Their line was perfectly fine last year, and their line will probably be perfectly fine this year. If they draft a receiver, the receiving core was frankly great last year. It's not going to improve with the addition of another receiver. It might help with depth, and it might give them more resiliency to injuries, like when Christian Watson blows out his hammies, but it's not going to be a needle mover. For the Packers to move the needle, they need to improve at safety, which they did with Xavier McKinney, but they need to, have another one out there. They could use another edge for Rashawn Gary getting hurt, and that effectiveness was worrisome last year, and Preston getting old, but Lucas Van Ness is there. And they do need off-ball linebacker, which we always talk about as being low value, but you still need one. Now, they could use some corner depth, and there is some corner depth in this draft. But again, like, there's not a huge way for the Packers to move the needle a ton here. The Bears, I think, have the potential to get much, much better very quickly. Huge upgrade at quarterback, huge upgrade at receiver. The Vikings, they had Cousins last year. Remember, he was hurt a lot of the time. There's a chance for them to move the needle hugely this year again. The Lions, man, kind of like the Packers, not huge. But this division could go from one of the worst consistent divisions in football instantly to one of the best, like being like the AFC West has been for a while. It's not great. So I'll be watching this draft for the Packers for sure, but I'll be spending almost as time just hoping and praying that everybody else screws this up. From a Vikings perspective, I think it would be nice. If they aligned with Bo Nix or J.J. McCarthy, I think that's okay. We can live with that. Those are kind of the Vikings picks. Those are like Tommy Kramer kind of picks. That's where the Vikings tend to settle it at quarterback. They're not as bad as the Bears, but that's kind of where they live. Rooting hard against them getting Drake May. Bo Nix would be my preferred guy there, obviously, who I think can be good, but has some problems that we'll talk about in a second. For the Bears, they're obviously going to get Caleb Williams, but the big thing I'm rooting for there is for them to take Brock Bowers and not Roma Dunes. I want Roma Dunes off the board by the time they make that second pick. If they have that trio of receivers, that is very, very dangerous very, very quickly. And for the Lions last year, if you'll recall, were extremely stupid in the draft. They traded up for Jahmyr Gibbs, and they picked Iowa off-ball linebacker guy whose name escapes me with their two first-round picks. So what I'm rooting for there is really for them just to continue to be kind of stupid in the draft. I don't know what was going on with the Lions last year, but I hope it continues. However, if they just randomly pick wide receivers, they'll improve their team quite drastically. So I'm hoping they pick sort of the offensive linemen that we don't like as much. Offensive line is a good offensive line draft, but it doesn't move the needle for the Lions to take offensive linemen. They're already good at that. So rooting for that. And rooting for them to like reach at positions of need, I guess is what I'm going for there. That'd be good. Now, let's talk about quarterbacks for a second. I know I talk about quarterbacks a lot, but there's new information. So I wanted to point out a source of new information, good information I didn't know was going to exist. The Ringer put out a good draft guide, and you can find it at NFLDraft.TheRinger. And I would especially urge you to take a look at the quarterbacks specifically. The quarterback scouting was done by Ben Solak, who is generally pretty good at that kind of thing. And it is, I think, a more consumable version of what Sports Info Solutions and their Total Points tries to do when they evaluate quarterbacks. Specifically, it breaks down how often a quarterback threw with pinpoint precision, how long they were able to stand in the pocket to deliver a pass under pressure, and their general accuracy like across the field. It's very, very visually appealing. They did a great job on making this easy to understand. Instantly, you get a view of exactly what quarterbacks were good and bad at. And I want to bring this back to Jaden Daniels, who I was very, very high on, and I've just been sinking and sinking and sinking on as time has gone on. I think he can still work in the NFL, but, well, let's get to this. Jaden Daniels had one of the best seasons a quarterback has ever had this year. Like, off the charts, great. He was the best passer by leaps and bounds. His Quobo Plus was great. He played it for LSU against hard defenses. He did have good receivers, but so did everybody else in this draft. Like, Bo Nix had great receivers, and Michael Penix had good receivers. Well, Drake May didn't. He had garbage receivers. But, Jaden Daniels played against hard defenses and just lit the world on fire. Pinpoint precision all over the field. One of the greatest rushing seasons a quarterback has ever had, and just looked like dynamite. Now, I lean towards liking the guys who blow Quoba out of the water, especially if they are physically talented, which Jaden is. I think he has a good arm. It's not the best in the class, but it's a good arm. He is extremely mobile. His accuracy is phenomenal. I love guys like that. I do. He didn't throw any interceptions at all. And the running is a bonus. Now, he is a little slight. He is not really built like a huge guy. And he's older, so he's not going to fill in. But he's tall. He's 6'4", and 210 is certainly not small. He's just kind of narrow, a little bit weird. He honestly looks a little like JJ, a little wider than JJ, but kind of a similar build. And he does take those like kind of crazy highlight reel hits when he runs, but on the surface level, it's hard to put anything bad on Jaden Daniels. Now, I put together my draft sheet every year, and I color-code it red and green and yellow for various things that quarterbacks do well and do poorly. And there is one thing on there that jumps out for Jaden, that being his pressure-to-sack ratio. And the pressure-to-sack ratio is important. And it's important enough that it can, I think, kind of cast a shadow over everything else a guy does. Now, Jaden Daniels' pressure-to-sack ratio this year is not terrible. It's not good, but it's not terrible. It is 23.3%. That he takes a sack on 23.3% of his pressures. Justin Fields is sort of the prototypical, if you do this, you'll be bad guy, and his was around 25%. So you can see we're in the area where this could be a problem, but it's not, I would say, a definitive problem. Honestly, Caleb was in the same ballpark as this. And so, if you know, logic would say, if you're going to ding one, you got to ding the other. However, here I think context becomes very important. And here's where Solak did, I think, a phenomenal job. I have had this theory about Jaden Daniels, and no way to prove it. So it's just a theory. I may have even put it out there once or twice, which is that, well, let's back up a little bit. 2022, Jaden Daniels, a season ago, he also had a good season, but not as good. He didn't rush for as many yards. He was more inaccurate. He was like 15% better above average instead of like 40% above average. But the big difference between 2022 and 2023 was he took a sack on 30% of his pressures that year, which is unplayable. It is so high that I would immediately exclude that guy from consideration as an NFL talent if that was his just normal sack-taking rate. You literally can't win in the NFL with that, and you're going to die. So Jaden Daniels improved that. He improved it to 23.3%, and improvement is good, but the way he got to that improvement is, I think, a big question. And my theory was that they turned him into a two-read quarterback this year. Instead of having him sit back there and be a big game hunter and try and hit balls down the field, they told him, make one read, make two reads, and if they're not there, take off running. And that seems to be actually the case. And I'm just going to actually read some of what Ben Solak wrote here. You should go read this. But here's what he has to write about Jaden Daniels in the Ringer Guide. In all my time charting, I don't think I have seen anything quite like Daniels' pressure response numbers. He stood in the face of pressure and delivered a pass on just over one out of every three dropbacks. That is an absurd number. He took a sack on 23.3% of dropbacks I charted, which is significantly ahead of second worst place, J.J. McCarthy, at 18.3%. Just as absurd, and maybe even more concerning. How about a pinpoint rate that drops from 70.5% on the first read to 46.3% when throwing beyond it, or an interceptable pass rate of 4.5%, tops among all quarterbacks I charted in this class? Daniels did push the ball downfield more than anyone else, but I'm not sure he'll be able to find the same downfield success when he isn't playing with Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. The good news, those downfield accuracy numbers sure are nice. Just don't look at the intermediate middle. And just to put that into a little more context, Daniels, under pressure, ran way more than everybody else. Like, more than any other prospect has ever run under pressure. and so I think my theory is correct that Daniels didn't improve by getting the ball out quicker than he did in 2022, or checking down, or finding people underneath, or even throwing the ball away. He only threw the ball away on 3.3% of his pressures. What he did instead was take off running. Now, he was incredible at running. He was successful on like 70% of his total runs this year. He had one of the best running seasons ever. However, you have to think about how this is going to translate to the next level. Are you going to be able to be a two-read guy who then takes off running at the NFL level? And are you going to be able to do that and not get killed? Jaden Daniels is not. He is going to, if he tries to run like he did in college, he's going to get hurt, and he's going to get hurt a lot. He needs to improve getting the ball out under pressure. He needs to speed up his clock, which is the worst thing I can say about any quarterback. Now, from a clean pocket, there was nobody better. He was absolutely phenomenal. However, I do think you have to consider who his receivers were. Like, Malik Nabers is awesome. Brian Thomas Jr. had an awesome season. People are split on him a little bit more. But man, I think there are way more red flags on Jaden Daniels than I did like 3 weeks ago. And I wouldn't put him in my no touch like thing, but at the top of the draft, I would be really, really skeptical about taking him. I think there is huge bust potential there. Now, my comp for him back in the day was he is mobile Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is probably the best quarterback that got sacked on a high percentage of his passes. They played at the same school, both with excellent receivers. And Burrow, you know, he does take a lot of sacks in the NFL, but he does get the ball out. He's very accurate. I think they throw very similarly to each other, but Joe Burrow has gotten hurt. That Cincinnati offensive line has gotten him killed. He is a bad pressure to sack guy and was in college. And so I think that's one of the lenses you can use to look here. Like, upside, I think, is mobile Joe Burrow, but is he going to survive? And I'm not out on Daniels, but I would moved him down my draft board quite a bit. Vegas disagrees. They've moved him up. People love Jaden Daniels. And, you know, when you put up one of the greatest seasons in the history of college football, I kind of get that. But I would urge caution. I do think the Vikings can do a good job of protecting him. And so I do hope he does not land there. But I am way, way, way more down on him than before. But go check this stuff out. Like, all of the charting and statistics they put together for all of these guys is very, very good. And it's not like I like Jaden Daniels necessarily less than J.J. McCarthy. It's just that McCarthy is, I think, he's also a slight build. And I think if he takes too many hits, he also will not survive very long in the NFL. But he was just much better at standing and delivering in the pocket, at getting rid of the ball, at escaping. He's not in the red zone of taking too many sacks, but I think he's less likely to get himself killed. So I do want to mention Bo Nix really quick. I've actually come up a little bit on Bo. The problem with Bo Nix is that he checked down more than anybody else kind of ever in history at Oregon. Oregon, had the second highest rated receiving class by PFF. Arizona was actually first, and I don't know why, but they were. But like they were graded out higher than the combo of Neighbors and Thomas and of the awesome guys at Washington and Harrison and all the Ohio State guys. But Bo Nix's ADOT was 6, and like Drake Mays was 11. Like that's a big difference. Bo Nix was never throwing the ball at all. The interesting thing about Bo Nix is, well, he was super accurate throwing short passes. And honestly, he's kind of the anti-Penix. Michael Penix threw a great deep ball, but struggled mightily on everything else. Like, bad on checkdowns, bad footwork and mechanics on intermediate throws. Bo Nix, very good at those throws. Like, accurate as all get out on short and intermediate throws, and had a team that could make the most out of those. Tons of yak, tons of creation after the fact, and his pinpoint percentage in the Solak article, very good. Gave his guys opportunity to catch the ball in stride, and make some hay out of it. And Nix didn't throw a lot of deep passes, but in charting, he was at least very accurate when doing so. Now, Nix was getting the ball out very quickly because of how Oregon's offense was, how easy they made it. And so Nix did not spend a lot of time under pressure. But Bo Nix has played a lot of games in college football, and we know that his big problem is under pressure. But Nix is bad under pressure. Now, he's not pressured a lot, or he wasn't at Oregon, but when he is pressured, he tends to react by throwing the ball up to whoever he was last looking at and create a lot of turnover-worthy plays. Now, again, it didn't happen that much at Oregon, but he's been around, and he has played at other schools where this was a problem. And I think this is where projecting Bo Nix becomes an issue. He has a good arm, one of the best in the class. He's behind May, but I think he might be, I mean, behind Milton. Everybody's behind Milton. But I think after those two, he's probably the next in terms of pure arm strength. He's fast. He's a good athlete. And his short field accuracy is very, very good. I put athletic Brock Purdy on J.J. McCarthy. It's probably more accurate for Bo Nix. But Bo has this problem where, if he is forced to throw down the field a little bit more and he winds up on a team that doesn't protect him as well, he's going to be a turnover problem. But you can see why he would be a good fit in maybe the Vikings as well. But more than that, don't sleep on the Lions for Bo Nix, because of all the... So Penix, I think, is going to fall. Of the big six, Penix is the most likely to fall into the second round or later, but Bo is the next most likely to be available late. The Lions pick at 29. I don't think they're necessarily actively shopping for a quarterback, but they probably are at least a little bit. And if Bo ends up falling in that range, I won't be surprised if they take him. And I do think that's a problem because Ben Johnson also calls a good game. And I think that is a great landing spot for him should he wind up there. Now, he wouldn't be a year one starter, obviously. The Lions are set there. But their only other guy is Hendon Hooker. And while Hendon Hooker was a phenomenal college quarterback as well, he's going to be 27 and coming off an ACL tear. I don't think he's the future there. Yeah, never know. But if Bo Nix did land there, I think that would be bad too. I think that's a good spot for him, and it could turn into something. So I'm worried about this draft just because of how easy it will be for our opponents to improve. Now, maybe they'll screw up because we've seen this before and they've screwed up before. But I don't think so. I think this is going to turn into a really competitive division. And while the Packers, I think, are in great shape with a very good quarterback and maybe a great quarterback, that things are not going to get easier for them. And hopefully they knock this one out of the park as well. But I think the competition is going to jump up and join them very quickly. Now, last thing before we get out of here. I think, sorry, I have to pull up a graphic. There we go. Been a lot of talk on the Twitters about the Packers' thresholds. And there are a couple of people out there who I won't name who will pop up on your feed if you talk about potential Packer draft picks and basically tell you they're not doing that because of the thresholds. And I wanted to talk about the thresholds a bit because I know something about thresholds. The Packers are pioneers in using athletic thresholds. And they're a good idea because it's difficult to be an expert on every single player in the draft, despite what Dane Brugler does with the Beast every year. There's the more things you try to know about, the less you will know about those things. Time is a scarce resource, and NFL teams do have a lot of time and resources and whatnot to go and scout all these people. But there's a trade-off in that. And one of the things using cutoffs does is it makes the pool shallower that you have to look at. You can become more expert in the guys that you're more likely to take, and that is very, very helpful. Ted Thompson was kind of the pioneer there. The Packers really focused on three cone with him, especially on receiver. But they have thresholds for everything, and it just helps to make a big group of guys where you can just say, no, not interested. Now, they don't rigorously adhere to these, and they haven't for a while. Like Amari Rodgers didn't meet any thresholds of any kind, and he ended up on the team. Tends not to work out when they go against the thresholds, but yeah, that. But I feel like there's a notion that they're super rigorous, especially around the margins of the thresholds. And I don't think that's true, because having gone through this exercise myself, you see where you miss at the margins and how you can get those guys back pretty easily. When I first started making QBOPs and ROPs, I had, just as a sort of heuristic of who I wanted to look at, I had the 400-600 club, guys that completed however many percent of passes, completion percentage got you to 400. I think it's like 67 is right about the cutoff line for that, and that were accurate and doing damage downfield. And I would have that cutoff, but guys started just, like, Justin Herbert, I think, was, like, right at the margins of both. And I didn't miss him because I saw he was right at the margins of both. But, like, I had to find a way to include those guys. And so, I like, what Quoba and Roba do is they basically create a scale where you can overcome the cutoff in one if you're good enough in the other. And I think, generally speaking, everybody kind of does that. Like, I doubt very much the Packers have a super hard cutoff on all of their metrics. If a guy comes around and he's like the greatest athlete of all time, except his arms are a quarter inch too short, they're not going to have that guy off their board. They're just not. Like, that would be a dumb way of going about things. And so there are, I think, a lot of threshold whisperers on Twitter. Don't be that guy and understand that they are more like guidelines. Code of the Pirate thing here. So anyway, we've gone all that out of the way. We've gone through the thresholds, the ones that we consider to be important, the ones we know about, or at least suspect highly that the Packers care about. And we got a list of the guys that they're very likely to take if they stay at 25 that will be available, that meet their thresholds, and that they will be tend to like. And those guys are Troy Fotanu, the offensive lineman from Washington, Amarius Mims, the giant offensive lineman from Georgia, Graham Barton, the offensive lineman from Duke, who some people think has too short of arms for this, but I don't think does, Jackson Powers Johnson, the lineman from Oregon, Tyler Guyton, the offensive lineman from Oklahoma, Jazan Newton, the defensive lineman from Illinois, who I hope we don't take. I will consider that a bad draft if we end up with him. Laiatu Latu, the edge rusher from UCLA. Chop Robinson, the incredibly athletic edge rusher from Penn State, who is very Rashawn Gary. Darius Robinson, who I still haven't looked at to know anything about, edge rusher from Missouri. Of course, Cooper DeJean, my personal favorite from Iowa, who I bet is off the board. He's a defensive back who can play both positions. Nate Wiggins, the cornerback from Clemson, who is very good and I do like a lot. And Kool-Aid McKinstry, the cornerback from Alabama, who I don't like. And will, if they pick him, I will consider it a bad draft and that they should have traded one way or the other. So those are the guys to keep an eye on if they stick at 25. I think there's a good chance they move one way or the other. But if they stay there, probably be one of those guys. Those are the threshold guys that are likely to be around. So that's that. All right. Next week, I think we'll do a real show. I'm rounding up the troops to do a real show, an actual reporting is eligible. We'll probably do one the week before and the week after, because draft is a big deal. There will be a bunch of frozen tundra frequency stuff coming out as well, assuming everything works. You know, we're getting set up. Setups sometimes have hiccups, but assuming everything works, we should have some coverage there as well. And there'll be some kind of live show. We'll let everybody know that. On Thursday for the first round. We'll see if we can do it on Friday as well. But hey, It's almost here. We're almost there. We're almost done. The draft is upon us. So enjoy reading up on everything. Enjoy the football we have. Enjoy the Brewers not having any starting pitching, but still winning somehow. And we will be back next week with a whole bunch of stuff.
He was a hero and your brother and my son. He fought the darkness won. And he fought bravely, and he died bravely. But he was forsaken by the ones he wished to save. And when he died in vain. You need to know.